Good morning, and thanks for tuning in today, December 12th. I'm Susie Prez, and this is The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. Today, we are presenting a previously recorded interview. Jean Girth and I had a chance to sit down with two of the main organizers of Reclaim Idaho, Garrett Strzic and Emily Strzic, who played a major role in organizing a petition drive earlier this year to get Medicaid expansion put on the general election ballot, and then a statewide campaign to get out the vote for yes on Proposition 2 or Medicaid expansion. We'll get to that interview, but first, a bit of news and a bit of weather from the National Weather Service. Currently, we have 36 degrees and a 30% chance of snow with a high of 36 today. So we've already reached our high, according to the National Weather Service. Tonight, an 80% chance of snow with a low of 30, and that total amount of accumulation could be around 1 inch. The main thing that we're looking at is wind coming up, especially down near Coeur d'Alene. So if you think about the highways and driving, the road report from the Idaho Department of Transportation says that currently on I-95 between Coeur d'Alene and Ponderay, you can look out for icy patches and expect cloudy skies. The wind could pick up to about 20 miles per hour wind gusts down towards Coeur d'Alene. So just be aware of slow driving. Tomorrow's weather, high of 37, 90 to 80% chance of snow or rain. And Thursday night, 40 to 20% chance of snow rain with a low of 28. Pretty much winter weather, but I can attest to the fact that out there right now, the roads are icy. So that means drive slow. We wanted to bring in a new segment called City News. So we're going to just really bring in a little bit of news from the city, not breaking news, but just what's going on there. Today, I'm going to talk about 2018-19 winter weather snow and road response plan from the city. It's similar to previous years when it snows 2 inches or more. The crews will plow all streets, including residential streets. What's new this year, you may ask? Well, more plowing sooner due to proactive scheduling of crews, more equipment and people available for snow plow removal, greater emphasis on streets most traveled, simplified seasonal parking rules. I'm not sure what that means, but you can check out their website about that. Updated snow removal policy and priority route map, improved communication with the Engage Sandpoint app, access to new City Snow Hotline, and that hotline is 208-920-SNOW. S-N-O-W. I don't have the numbers for that. You can check out their website at sandpointidaho.gov. And one of the coolest new things the city's brought together is called Engage Sandpoint. You can sign up for this, report issues, find resources, stay informed. And that website again, sandpointidaho.gov. And Engage Sandpoint is a really cool app that you can really be involved, and you can call them, you can tell them things, they'll follow up, and you can watch how things unfold in the city. So now we want to bring you the interview with three Reclaim Idaho founders, Garrett and Emily Strzic. Luke Mayville was the other founder, and they worked together to really come up with what Reclaim Idaho. You'll hear a little bit about that, but you'll also, in this interview, this pre-recorded interview, you will hear how they really brought together the proposition to get it on the ballot. You'll also hear a bit from their four-month-old baby, Simone, as she was here in the studio when we did the interview. And yes, Proposition 2, expanding Medicaid expansion, did pass and was signed into law on Tuesday, November 20th by Acting Governor Brad Little. Little said this at the signing, "Idaho voters sent a message to the state legislature, first with their petition signatures and second with their votes. Now it's time they stepped into the arena. Now it's time they stepped into the arena to remind their elected officials that the will of the people must be honored. It passed with a 60% vote on November 6th. So now here is the interview, and thanks for tuning in to the morning show. I'll be back with a little bit more news and information and upcoming events at the after the interview, so stay tuned. And thanks for tuning in. This is our interview with Garrett and Emily Strizich.
We're here with two of the founders of Reclaim Idaho, Garrett Strizich and Emily Strizich. Thank you for joining us today. For the past 18 months, there's been a lot of work going on with Reclaim Idaho, and that's what we want to find out about today and get to know you two a little bit. And I think congratulations are in order for all of your hard work to get Proposition 2 on the ballot.
And according to the website, Reclaim Idaho is a grassroots movement designed to elect candidates who believe in strengthening public schools, protecting public lands, and extending health care to working families. We are 1,000 volunteers strong with volunteer leaders in 25 Idaho counties. However, during the past 16 months, the efforts of Reclaim Idaho have focused on getting Medicaid expansion on the November general election ballot as a voter proposal through the statewide petition drive that you had and signature gathering campaign. Then once that was on the ballot, you gathered together volunteers from all over the state to get out the vote yes on Proposition 2.
And I forgot to mention that the other person in the studio today is Simone, who's their four-month-old baby. So these two have welcomed a new soul into the world, too. So the campaign was a successful one on both counts. And we want to find out how in the world you got that done, and then to find out what the next steps are in this legislative process to have the Medicaid expansion implemented into law. Back to the beginning, then. What brought each of you to the mission of Reclaim Idaho? What was the impetus for forming this group?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us here today, Garrett, myself, and Simone. And just thank you for the work you do for this community here in Sandpoint. Sandpoint's, of course, near and dear to us. Reclaim Idaho began here in Sandpoint, and it really started as we were organizing around a school levy. Some of you might recall a school levy in March of 2017, and it wasn't actually looking good. A previous facilities levy had failed pretty horrendously, like 2-1. And this school levy was going to be a big deal. They were going to close down three schools. 300 teachers would have lost their jobs. You know, extracurriculars were going out the door. And I, of course, work with youth in this community. And to me, it was just essential that those schools remained open. You know, for a lot of those kids, that was the only hot meal they were getting. That was maybe the only place they felt safe during a week. So we organized around that school levy to make sure, you know, that people are going to get out and vote in favor of it. And what we found was, you know, at a short notice, we were able to get about 60 volunteers and knock on almost 3,000 doors in a weekend. And, you know, that school levy with 2-1. So that was, you know, I think we realized from there was a lot of energy to be harnessed and a lot of people who had kind of said, enough is enough with watching some of these opposition groups kind of take control of our government and kind of erode things and erode those services and systems that we've held dear, you know, those institutions like public education. So I think we really saw that there was energy and reason to form something that could maybe push back and have a little bit more reasonable consensus building issues out there that were a part of that political dialogue that was happening. So we formed Reclaim Idaho around those kitchen table issues, you know, continued access to public lands, strong public schools. You know, we're not talking about, you know, so many communities have gone to 4-day weeks. And that's just a travesty for all these kids and the families that then have to figure out what to do with their kids that fifth day of the week. You know, and then, of course, access to health care for working families, which is really where the Medicaid expansion came from. You know, we set out on a tour in our 1977 green camper. And, you know, the idea was to just talk to folks about what their experiences were with healthcare in Idaho. And we found that was pretty atrocious. And people had really devastating life circumstances that were leading to bankruptcies and homelessness and It was pretty devastating for people. And so we really saw that, you know, the Medicaid expansion was the most pressing issue. There was also a lot of energy around the summer of 2017 with the current administration's efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. So to us, healthcare was just the most pressing issue.
Yeah, I think it's really important here just to acknowledge the work of Luke Mayville, who is, you know, the other leg of this three-legged stool that we created, Reclaim Idaho, here in Sandpoint. It was his background in political organizing, community organizing, and really his ability to paint this vision of a movement that had the potential to really reclaim our democracy and reclaim the conversation away from the opposition groups, which had really controlled things, especially here in northern Idaho, you know, where there was this threat that Bonner County school districts would go to a four-day school week and a significant number of schools would close, you know, and the opposition was out there really energized to push this agenda forward. They had closed schools in Bonner's Ferry, Boundary County already. They were on a four-day school week. So there was a real threat that this was going to move south. And 44 counties in Idaho, or sorry, excuse me, 44 school districts in the state of Idaho have already gone to a four-day school week. So that was something we were really pushing back against with this. And we sensed the energy. People were fed up with this. And as we started to organize around these core issues that we see as really consensus values, healthcare access, education for everybody, we started to notice so much energy. And we noticed, especially like Emily mentioned, around the healthcare issue. Right now, Medicaid, at this point, Medicaid was under threat at the federal level. You know, there was talk of block granting the Medicaid program, which would have thrown a lot of people off of their benefits. And we saw this as an opportunity not just to push back against that, but to talk about expanding Medicaid, because ever since the Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010, there was this opportunity to replace, to expand Medicaid in order to cover the working poor of Idaho and other states around the country. So this presented just an incredible opportunity to organize around.
So both of you felt pulled in. You're friends with Luke Mayville, mm-hmm. too. So you formed this three stool opposition to the opposition groups. Emily, you mentioned opposition groups that were set to oppose the levy for school districts. What do you see these opposition groups' mission is? Not to get into it too much, but what really caught your attention that there had to be another group to offset that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure what the ultimate mission is. You know, they talk a lot about freedom, but you know, to me, the mission seemed more centered around eroding any of those kind of public services. I think at the end of the day, these groups tend to be fairly anti-government. So when you have governmental programs such as Medicaid, such as public education that are successful, you know, there's concerted efforts to erode those programs to make them look less successful. Because I think when you have successful government programs, it of course threatens those people who are trying to erode government. So I think that at the end of the day tends to be sort of what their ultimate aim is. But we also know that they use some of these tactics, this fear-mongering to fundraise. So, you know, at the end of the day, maybe the almighty dollar speaks fairly loudly for what some of their motivation may be. But I do find it interesting when these groups talk about freedom and liberty and those like kind of unalienable rights, because when we were out driving around the state talking to people about what their experiences had been within the healthcare system, I don't think there's a lot of freedom when you're working three jobs trying to pay off tens of thousands of dollars of debt, you know, for something that was like easily preventable through primary care. So it seems antithetical when they talk about freedom when you see people strapped with like crippling debt and life stressors when they could have easily have those things prevented with access to health insurance.
And I just wanted to revisit the timeline here because it mm-hmm. seems so incredible to me that the levy was just last March, right?
Yeah,
March of
2017.
Year. 2017, right. Yeah.
Then that kicked off this whole Medicaid expansion idea
yes.
for Reclaim Idaho. And then what happened?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think about it. And, you know, we had no idea that this type of movement around the state would have been possible when we got started, let alone to actually, achieve Medicaid expansion and bring healthcare access to about 62,000 people who currently cannot get it. So, yeah, it's pretty staggering. And I think it just speaks to the power of this issue, really, in Idaho. The situation that you had at that time, the summer of 2017, is that the legislature had been debating for 6 years at this point about whether or not to accept the federal funding to expand the Medicaid program. So just to be clear, you know, a lot of people don't really appreciate the gravity of this situation. You had, when the Affordable Care Act, you had hundreds of millions of dollars that had been allocated to Idaho to cover low-income people that are working, mostly working. They have mental illnesses, many of them. Many of them have drug issues, but they cannot access health care. And this money had been set aside for these people, and it wasn't getting to where it needed to be because our legislature could not, you know, agree to bring it in. You know, there was fighting about how to address this problem of the coverage gap. And so it was just such an obvious issue. The money's there. People need access to healthcare. They have no other way of accessing healthcare, even though they're working. You could really just feel in the healthcare community and just in the general public, people that were paying attention, like, what is going on? This doesn't make any sense. Our legislature is not working for us at this point. Somebody needs to do something. So it was kind of like the school levy where you could just feel it, you know. Everybody that we talked to felt like something needed to be done, but there wasn't a sense for how to take action, really. People really wanted to take positive action, make sure that this happened, but they didn't know how. And so we came along and we were the catalyst. We decided, let's make a spectacle out of it. Let's paint our old camper green. We had the summer off because I was about to start medical school. And so we just decided to drive all around the state with Luke and go stumping for Medicaid expansion. It wasn't until after we really heard the positive reception all over the state that we decided, okay, maybe we should put this on the ballot. Maybe people should get a chance to vote and it would actually pass.
But I should also add, you know, when we would talk to people who maybe know more about politics than we do, you know, they say, oh, there's no way you could get this thing on the ballot. There's no way you could possibly, because it takes millions of dollars. You know, you would only have 4 months and then be in the dead of winter, you know, and since the Luna Law referendum, which some of your listeners may recall, since the last successful citizens initiative, which was the Luna Law referendum, the legislature actually voted to make it more difficult to get something on the ballot. So in addition to requiring 6% of total signatures, you needed to get 6% of signatures from 18 of 35 voting districts. So we were very fortunate to have toured all around the state, to have connected with people all around, to be able to, you know, form local bodies in all corners of the state. But, you know, there were a lot of reasons that people said, by conventional wisdom, it's impossible to get something on the ballot. But, you know, the three of us just figured, well, what's the harm in trying? Like, and if at the very least we try and we're able to shift the conversation in politics, you know, from away from like who is the most pro Second Amendment candidate out there to something that really impacts people's daily lives here, then we will have thought this was a success. And so, you know, just by putting one foot in front of the other, and we just kept on marching. And here we are today, having passed Proposition 2 with a landslide victory.
So just back up a moment. You're talking about the first step once you realize this could be your campaign picture for probably 2 years almost. You took an exploration trip around the state in the green van, and you kind of made connections in 20, 25 communities. This is way before you started gathering the petition. And then you found out what it would take to get it on the ballot. And at that point, how did you feel just saying, we're going to do this? What was that initial experience?
Like before we actually embarked on the initial tour?
When you said yes, but we haven't quite done it yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we got a lot of pushback, you know, even as we were planning this, you know, people were like, well, should we really say Medicaid expansion? You know, there was this sense that Medicaid expansion really is not popular in Idaho, especially in rural areas. And this was despite what the polling suggested, There was a poll from Boise State University going back to early 2017 that said that 70% of Idahoans favor closing the coverage gap. So there was a lot of reason to think this was popular, but there was also this sense that it really wasn't popular in rural areas. So we heard, you know, a lot of pushback. People said, like, wow, you're really going to these areas. People are going to throw Molotov cocktails at you, you know, when you go through town. You know, this is not going to be good. And in the end, we like to joke that people were actually buying us cocktails when we would show up in town. We would roll into town. And after getting over the confusion of this big green camper rolling into town, they would come up to us and they would say, thank you for what you're doing. This is so important. And they sometimes they would literally hand us money, like buy yourself lunch, buy yourself a drink. So they understood almost everybody we talked to that there's a healthcare crisis in Idaho. You know, so many people are struggling to access healthcare in this state right now. They just cannot get it. And when they do need care, they're at risk of they're going to go bankrupt. You know, if it's for something serious. So that's how that ended up happening.
Can you give us a sense of who it was? You developed this incredible volunteer network to go out and get signatures for the petition. Mm-hmm. Who were those volunteers? Who did you connect with? Were they in groups? Were they individuals coming up to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it was, I think in any of these communities, you have people who have kind of had their ear to the ground for a long time and been kind of waiting, kind of hungry for something to organize around. Oftentimes in these communities, it was healthcare professionals who were obviously very aware of the healthcare crisis that we had here in Idaho. So a lot of times, you know, we would roll into a town, for instance, and there would be a physician that had organized and had brought, you know, several of their community members with them to whatever our kickoff was. But let's be realistic. You know, when we first went to Boise, I think there were maybe 15 people that came to our event there. You know, it was one of our smaller events. And now we have, you know, hundreds of volunteers just in Boise. So there was a lot of effort that went into, and this is where so much of the credit goes to Luke. There was a lot of effort that was put into, you know, we of course had these sign-up sheets and we went around. And don't get me wrong, you know, there was of course a buzz around what we were doing in 2017, but it really took the relationships that Luke groomed through, you know, reaching back out to every single phone number on those lists saying, can you organize in this community? Do you know people in this community that's nearby that we were unable to get in touch with? You know, so a lot of the credit goes to him for really helping to build our network around the state. And it was, you know, we would connect with people who had previously, you know, and a lot of it was just like social media, like who's really actively sharing these things in their communities. And again, the credit goes to Luke, because when we first started, if somebody would like one of our posts on Facebook, Luke would reach out to that person through Facebook Messenger and say, like, hey, we're going to be in Idaho Falls. Can you come to this, you know, rally that we're having? Can you come to this talk that we're going to do? Can you help us organize at the local level? So there was a lot of effort that went into it initially. And don't get me wrong, that there's still effort that goes into, you know, volunteer recruitment. But I think it was a bit of a snowball effect that people were tired of just retweeting things or sharing things on Facebook and not seeing the needle move, you know, in Idaho politics or even at the national level. And so I think a lot of people that we spoke to, you know, of course, Garrett and I organized our group down in Moscow, and we're, of course, so grateful and thankful to the people who have organized there. But we very commonly hear from them, like, thank you for giving me something actionable to do. Thank you for creating something that's given me hope again, because, you know, I felt like I was just really hopeless. And I think a lot of them have said, you know, the antidote to this helplessness I'm feeling is being able to go out and get signatures. And we assumed people would be exhausted after the election and want a break. But, you know, people are reaching out to us daily saying, what's next? We're ready to fight. We want to keep moving. There's something really addictive and empowering about being able to do something positive for your community, I think.
A really powerful story, if I could, real quick. It comes from the Grangeville team. Grangeville is in Idaho County, probably one of the most, you know, deep Republican counties in the state. We arrived in Grangeville in the dead of winter, right after we had decided to put this on the ballot. We drove the Medicaid mobile in. It had just started snowing as we're coming in on the Camas Prairie. And we arrive at a community center to more than 20 people that were hanging out. We showed up a little bit late. They were meeting already. One of the former members of the local hospital board of directors was there talking about the importance of this. He and other leaders there had recruited all of these people because they understood just how important this was. And it was almost as if they had been waiting for years for us to roll through in our green RV to give them something positive to work toward that could actually lead to Medicaid expansion happening. You know, this is a community where their hospital not only is on the brink of collapse, but they had to raise taxes because it's a county hospital. You know, they have the ability to levy taxes from the county. They had to raise a levy just to maintain funding and keep the doors of the hospital open. That's how dire the situation is, because so many people there lack access to affordable health care. So the hospital ends up absorbing the costs. So to me, that was a really powerful story. And they continued after that day, they continued collecting signatures. And one of the major turning points in the campaign was when Idaho County team had about 700 signatures, which was more than 6% of the county. And at that point, we heard people in Moscow, especially you know, former Senator Dan Schmidt, who has helped us all along on this process, and he's one of the people who led the charge on this issue in the Idaho State Legislature. When he noticed that Idaho County had 700 signatures, that was the moment where he was like, wow, this is actually going to happen. And at that moment, he threw all of his energy into this campaign. And there were a lot of people that kind of saw this thing snowballing and said, like, wow, this is actually going to happen. I'm going to really throw myself into this. So many people literally dedicated all of their time to collecting signatures for this campaign.
And it's truly inspiring. Working and having a baby, and Luke's in New York, and mm-hmm. there were a lot of, I know you guys went out of your way time-wise for all of this. And this turned into a real bipartisan effort, did it not? There were both Republicans and Democrats supporting this.
Definitely. Absolutely. That was one of the amazing things, is because, you know, when you're here in Idaho, you're not going to be able to run a successful campaign if you only have the support of Democrats. And Democrats had traditionally been supporting this in the legislature. You know, there was bipartisan support, but they could not get a majority of Republicans, so they couldn't get it passed. But yeah, absolutely. We had to get Republican support. So that, I think, has been one of the successes of this campaign, is after we got this on the ballot, especially, you know, there had been Republicans and Democrats and independents involved in the signature drive, collecting the signatures. But after we got this on the ballot, one of the real successes was bringing in other members of our coalition that we formed, called Idahoans for Healthcare, to make sure that this passed. We built partnerships with the Idaho Hospital Association, the Idaho Medical Association, the Idaho Association of Commerce and Industry, and many others. Many Republican leaders in the Idaho legislature came out in favor of this, and even Butch Otter in the final weeks came out and threw his support behind the Medicaid expansion. So we're really, you know, appreciative of all of the work that those groups and those legislators put in to make sure that this passed.
So Butch Otter, the outgoing Republican governor, mm-hmm. came out, what I think it was only a week before the election, maybe 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, I think it just speaks to this issue as not being a political issue. You know, this is about people's lives. This is about making people more productive members of society. When they have access to healthcare, they're able to work, they're able to keep contributing to society. And, you know, everybody seemed to recognize that. If you look at Ohio, a Republican state implemented Medicaid expansion at the first opportunity. There, They've studied Medicaid expansion a lot because they wanted to prove that it was working. 83% of people that were on Medicaid expansion mentioned that it enabled them to hold down a job. 90% of the people that are enrolled in the Ohio Medicaid expansion continuously are people that are working, they're taking care of family members, or they have serious mental or physical illness. And this is something that enables them to access preventative care before it reaches the catastrophic level and they need to get treated in the emergency room, which is really the most inefficient way. So there was a success. 290,000 people were able to leave the program and get a job. So it's really a leg up, you know? We like to talk about this as a leg up because that's what it really is. And that's what so many people in both parties realized. And I think that's why it was effective.
I just want to read something that came out on Tuesday, November 20th. Acting Governor Brad Little signed the official proclamation that makes Medicaid expansion the law of Idaho. After voters strongly approved it through the November 6th ballot initiative, Idaho Secretary of State Lawrence Denny attested to Little's signature, and it was a 60-40 ballot passing. Mm-hmm. So congratulations. A lot of hard work.
Thank you.
How do you feel right now at this point? And then let's go into the bigger subject. What's next for this initiative? Are there oppositions? Yeah. Is there stuff that citizens can continue to do and be part of this?
Yeah, well, thank you. We're thrilled. We're just so gratified and just so honored to have been involved in this, and so honored that so many, you know, thousands of volunteers have gotten behind this issue and, you know, really thrown themselves into this issue. You know, we have people, working for free, you know, 40, 50 hours a week. And so we are just so grateful for those people who have gotten involved and really thrown themselves into this worthy cause. So, yeah, so I think overall I feel grateful. I feel tired, but energized because, like you said, like the people are lawmakers today, you know, and it's really easy, I think, to sit back and feel maybe impotent to affect change in your communities. But I think, you know, despite unreasonable odds, you know, we were successful. And when I say we, I talk about the royal we. I talk about the thousands of volunteers who have gotten involved with Reclaim Idaho and said that they want better and they demand better from, you know, from their legislators. And I think that is what's next for us, is continuing to put pressure on legislators. It's interesting to me that there were some folks who ran during this campaign and said, I'm going to do everything I can to actively oppose the will of the people should this pass. And so we know that there's going to be opposition during this legislative session down in Boise. But we know that 60-40 speaks pretty loudly. That's a resounding victory for politics. Medicaid expansion got more votes than, you know, Brad Little did, who our new governor. And so I think that really speaks to not only the bipartisan support behind this, but, you know, that the people are demanding better of their government. Like Garrett mentioned, you know, for 6 years, this federal funding has been available to our state to care for our most vulnerable working neighbors. And our legislature has refused that money simply because of ideology. And I think this really, the resounding victory speaks to people's kind of frustration and disdain for, you know, people putting politics ahead of the good of their neighbors. So,
yeah, it's hard to even describe the feeling of joy and just contentment the day after election, walking out, seeing the Medicaid mobile parked, and it says on the back, 78,000 Idahoans need health care, which was sort of the dated estimate of, you know, how many people fell in the coverage gap that couldn't access health care. To be able to see that and say and realize that we could now take that down, those people now can get access to health care, is just, you know, beyond words how important this was and how amazing
something to celebrate.
Yeah.
I just want to let the listeners know that we're in the studio talking with Garrett and Emily Strigich, and we're talking about the success of the Proposition 2 Medicaid expansion in Idaho.
So Brad Little signed the official proclamation, which was a way to get this, that this was the next step after the proposition passed. And then it says the initiative requires Idaho to submit its state plan amendment to expand Medicaid to the federal authorities within 90 days of the proclamation signing. The Idaho Health and Welfare spokesman said, "We don't anticipate any issues with being able to meet that deadline." It appears that the next issue that needs to be addressed is the budget with the legislature. Is that correct? So we need, this is, it's in law. Mm-hmm. Things are progressing, but there's still this budget,
right? Yes,
piece to it. So tell us about that and how people stay involved.
So the law itself stipulates that they must submit the state plan amendment, like you said, to explain the Medicaid expansion. So they're going to submit that within 90 days, probably quite a bit sooner, because we've heard that it's already, you know, been drafted, and it's fairly standard at this point, because, you know, every other state that has already expanded Medicaid has gone through this process. At this point, we don't expect that to be a problem. And the reason that the bill, the ballot measure, did not include its own funding mechanism, so it actually does require action on the legislature. The reason is because in Idaho, we already spend enough money on programs, existing programs, to care for people without health insurance, that we can shift that those funds around in order to fund 100% of the Medicaid expansion state portion. 90% is funded by federal funds, 10% will be funded by Idaho state funds, and we can shift around existing funds. So the funds are already there to cover the state portion. So it's really a matter of, during the legislative session, when they're hashing out the budget and working with the governor on that, to come to an agreement of exactly how those funds will shift around to pay for this program. Potentially, and probably likely, considering what we've been hearing out there from the opposition, who is still, you know, despite the landslide victory for Medicaid expansion, they're still talking about pushing back against this. There will probably be some work to create what they call a waiver, which means that, you know, if the full Medicaid expansion is not what some legislators want to do, there might be some work to carve out certain populations. For example, what other states have done is they've instituted work requirements for people that get access to care under Medicaid expansion. So those are the debates that are going to have to take place in the legislature. And what our work is going to focus on over the next few months is to make sure that the full will of the voters is implemented now, as soon as possible. If they want to come back and have this debate at a later time over work requirements or other waivers, then, you know, that's fine. But we want this to happen, to be implemented now, so that these people can get care as soon as possible. And then we'll come back, we'll push back against these waivers at when the time comes. So that's what our work will revolve around over the next couple months. So we'll be, you know, reactivating many people around the state that were involved in the petition drive. Many people are already, you know, ready, like, hey, what can I do now? How can we make sure that this gets implemented and funded? So that's what we're working on.
And what will some of those things be? I'm thinking phone calling your representative.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously phone calling your local representative. So for your listeners up here, it'd be phone calling, you know, Heather Scott and Sage Dixon, Sean Woodward, and making sure that they know that you are expecting them to fully implement the will of the people. You know, that's their job, is to represent us here, their voters. And so to make sure that they are doing that and hold them accountable, February 4th, we will be actually going, we have an event happening at the Capitol down in Boise. So there will be a lobbying day. So we'll be setting up meetings with our legislators and getting down there to talk to them and really show them that the people, you know, the people en masse support them doing their jobs, which I don't think is too much to ask. So yeah, it'll be phone calls, it'll be continued letters to the editor, it'll be you know, emails and letters to your legislators, but it's really keeping the pressure on. And I do think it's important to note that no state that has implemented work requirements has seen that incentivize work. And often what's happened is it actually costs more money and there's more bureaucratic red tape. And so it costs the state more money to cover less people. So, you know, what is the most effective, which leads to the most cost savings, is full implementation of the Medicaid expansion. Stop. You know, full stop. So I think it's important to remind people that any of these different waivers are just barriers to access. And like Garrett pointed out, ways to try to kind of systematically remove people from the rolls. Because, again, these groups want fewer people on government programs to try to prove that the government programs are ineffective. So, you know, and which we've seen in Arkansas, they implemented work requirements and 12,000 people lost their coverage. And so there, it's pretty easy to say, well, look, this isn't effective because here now there's 12,000 less people that are on our coverage and they're not getting the care. And now they're going back to using emergency rooms for routine care. And so it really is a way to sort of show that it's not effective. And I think it's important to start having that dialogue now around, you know, any of these programs like drug testing or work requirements. Any of these things they're talking about for the waivers are not effective or cost efficient ways to manage Medicaid programs. And we've seen that in some of the other states that have tried to implement those waivers.
So this is a pretty short timeline because the legislature meets again in starting in February. How would one stay up on these issues? Is this getting posted on your website?
So I would recommend people go to reclaimidaho.org and sign up so that we can get folks plugged in now. They can go at local levels to, they can also go to our Facebook site, and there'll be local groups organizing so that in December, you know, folks can get together and start planning what we're going to do, you know, in January when the legislature first meets. So I would encourage people to go check out our Facebook website and our overall website. On our website, reclaimidaho.org, they can sign up to be a part of the newsletter as well, which will keep people in the loop.
So both the Facebook and the webpage are Reclaim Idaho.
Yes. Yeah.
And just for a moment, we want to move to the next thought. What's next for the ballot? Is there going to be another ballot initiative eventually?
So, yeah. That's a great question. I think it's really important to think about everything we do at this point in terms of leading to the next step. We want to make sure that Medicaid expansion, the will of the voters, is implemented. And at the same time, carry this energy forward, this incredible momentum that led into the 2018 elections, which we initially were organizing for. Now here we are after the 2018 elections. How do we keep the momentum building? How do we make sure that in 2020, we start to chip away at the legislature in Idaho that made the Medicaid gap possible, that refused those federal funds for so many years? We need a new legislature. That means finding better candidates to run. You know, in Idaho Falls, you have a situation where one of the most vocal opponents to Medicaid expansion is a guy named Brian Zollinger, a state representative, and he himself works as a medical bill collector. So he stands to personally gain from the existence of the healthcare coverage gap here in Idaho. So we need people like that who are trying to, you know, who are just representing their own personal self-interest. We need to get those people out of the legislature and replace them with people that are going to work for the people of Idaho. So that's really what our goal is. You know, maybe Emily can speak to some of the other initiatives that we've talked about.
Yeah, I think people are surprised when they find out about Idaho's preemption laws. And one of those laws was that no cities could ban plastic bags. But more detrimentally, one of those preemption laws was that no local counties or cities could raise the minimum wage. And people are surprised to find out that that the legislator voted to make sure, you know, here in a state where we say that we value local control, they voted to make sure that no local ordinances could be passed that would raise the minimum wage. So, you know, you have places like Boise or Ketchum where people are working, you know, service industry jobs, and they cannot afford to live in the communities that they work in. They simply can't accept. If you, you know, work a minimum wage paying job, which I'm sure you guys have seen the stat that Idaho has the most per capita minimum wage paying jobs, that's $7.25 an hour. That is $15,000 a year. So if you live in Idaho and make $15,000 a year, it is very difficult to make ends meet.
In a lot of border communities, you know, where in Washington, the minimum wage is going up to $15 an hour here pretty soon. So it becomes a pretty easy choice if you're able to get a good job to go next door to Washington. Yeah. So it's a drain on our economy.
Yeah. So I think Reclaim Idaho may tackle something that addresses that disparity in wages here and, you know, help to provide living wages around Idaho. And it's not to suggest that, you know, in Orofino that everybody should be, you know, it would be something that would certainly be rated along the consumer price index. And I don't think a $15 minimum wage makes sense for all communities here in Idaho, but certainly, you know, to think about the preemption laws and that the legislature voted to make it more difficult for people to make ends meet is again one of those frustrations. To me, it's very analogous to the Medicaid coverage gap and that the legislature has put their own self-interests in front of that of their constituents.
Well, it sounds like Reclaim Idaho has plenty to do, and this is ongoing. Folks can find out more by going to reclaimidaho.org and join, sign up. You can get newsletters, all kinds of things if you want to get involved. And back to your mission, it's a grassroots movement designed to elect candidates. So you'll be keeping your eye on the 2020 election to see what those candidates' platforms are to support what Reclaim Idaho stands for. So we want to thank Garrett and Emily Strizich for coming in, and also baby Simone. So thank you, baby Simone, for being with us. And this,
she had some cameo sound.
Yes, she did, and she's darling. So thank you so much for joining us. And
Thank you so much for having us today. And I just want to quickly say thank you to the community of Sandpoint for believing in us when nobody else did, when we were just three optimists with a big green camper. So thanks to all your listeners.
Thank you. And you just heard a pre-recorded interview with Emily and Garrett Strizich about Reclaim Idaho, giving us a walk through the Reclaim Idaho campaign to get Medicaid expansion on the November ballot. And they did succeed. And then the efforts to get the yes vote out, and that also succeeded. It is now a law in Idaho that we will have Medicaid expansion for those folks that fall into the gap. If you want to stay informed about what Reclaim Idaho is doing, you can, as you previously heard, go to reclaimidaho.org. Also, if you want to listen to this podcast, that interview again, the podcasts of the morning shows are on our website at krfy.org, always available. And this is the morning show. I'm Susie Prez. Next week on the morning show on our morning show Wednesday, Chris Bessler, my co-host, and I will be sitting down with three community faith leaders to explore the reason for the season of Christmas and what that means from their points of view, and have a nice discussion about what that truly means. So that will be next Wednesday, December 19th. And tomorrow on the morning show, Jim Hilly and Jack Peterson will have invited Brad Huta, a retired cardiologist, to come to talk about stress and the holidays. Christmas is less than 2 weeks away, so here we go. We want to also thank John and Vicky, owners of the Idaho Poor Authority, for a recent fundraiser that they let us have at their beer store, the Idaho Poor Authority. It was a great success for KRFY, and those fundraisers for nonprofits are so important. Just as KRFY is listener supported, our community supports us in so many ways. We want to encourage folks to shop locally if you can for those Christmas presents and support this community by, shopping locally. You can also give to our KRFY end of the year giving campaign. Our giving, we're reaching out to get a little extra gift from our listeners. It's easy. You can go to our PayPal button. It's secure. It's simple. It's on our website at www.krfy.org. We certainly would appreciate any and all small Christmas or large Christmas gifts, whatever you can give. There's a lot going on in our community tonight at the Idaho Poor Authority, another one of those great nonprofit fundraisers. Tonight it's the Rock Creek Alliance. So that Double Mountain Brewing is the beer on tap. And Marty and Doug will be playing music, and the festivities start at 5 p.m. and go to 8 p.m. They'll have raffle prizes and complimentary appetizers. It's free and open to the public, and it's a great way to go support another important nonprofit in our community doing great work. Well, thanks for tuning in today, and thanks for listening to 88.5 KRFY, and thanks for supporting this local community radio station here in North Idaho. We are going to go out with a song, but before I tell you the song, I want to tell you about another event that's happening at the DeLunas Friday night. It's a CD release party concert with Beth Peterson and Bruce Bishop. They're releasing their new CD. It's called Driving Into the Moon. And you can call DeLunas at 208-263-0846. That's 263-0846. For more information, for tickets or dinner reservations, they will be down there Friday night. That's this Friday, December 14th. And here's a little tune from that CD. It's beautiful. You would love to hear them play live on Friday night. Beth Peterson, Bruce Bishop, Wings. This is a Josh Ritter song. This is called Wings. And I hope you have a beautiful day. After that, you're going to hear Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra doing White Christmas. And the reason is, it's Bing Crosby's birthday. He was born on this date. I'm trying to find the piece of paper that says it. Well, it's disappeared. But he was born, I think it was 1919. So today's Frank Sinatra's birthday. And after Beth Peterson and Bruce Bishop's song Wings, you'll hear White Christmas. Have a beautiful day. Thanks for tuning in. And please enjoy the rest of the day here at 88.5 KRFY, where autos will play until 5 o'clock.